your time is gone, you have time, and so on. We can manage that. Because especially the 8 minutes ones and so on, you can think that we finish before time or something like that. Just check with me, yeah, so that we use that time properly. Okay. That's what I can say for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Bihang Stock. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, as well as this subcommittee, which deals with the interviews. Thank you.
Good morning, ma'am. My name is Bridget Masango. I am the member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development and the member of the subcommittee.
Good morning to you, ma'am. My name is Leticia Aris. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, ma'am. I'm Dalmaine Christians. I'm also a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Otto Malika. I'm a member of the subcommittee.
Thank you very much. There's another member here, Honorable Gillian. I think she is attending to the private telephone calls. You know the private telephone calls? Yes. She will come and you will know her. I think we need to start, ma'am. I will shoot. What I'm going to do now, between me and you, is 3 minutes. So myself and yourself, we have got 3 minutes at our disposal. Just 3 minutes. But I'll be very short, so that 2 minutes something is yours. If you tell us about yourself and why have you opted to commit your time and energy to serve this institution, and tell us what will you bring. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Okay. Good morning. My name is Rachel Madikeledi Motsepe, known as Monkey. That's the name that I normally use. The reason why I responded to this call is because of my passion for community engagement. Apart from my academic qualification that is indicated on the CV there, I also have a very good history of working with communities locally and internationally. And for my master's degree, the research that I opted for was the use of illicit drugs in the city of Tshwane that was brought about by what I was seeing in the streets. And some of them, what was very saddening was the issue of students dropping out of tertiary institutions and be lured into drug using, and other psychosocial ills that elevate in communities, all as a result of the use of drugs in communities. So it's my passion, coupled with my academic qualifications and experience. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mrs. Motsepe, the Central Drug Authority was established by an Act of Parliament. If you could please let us know which Act that is and what does the Act seek to achieve? Thanks.
Okay. I think it's Act 80, and the aim is to implement the National Drug Master Plan, which also aims to cascade into LDACs, like local drug committees, and then in other municipalities like Tshwane, they have the Regional Drug Action Committees, which the main aim of National Drug Master Plan, even the latest reviewed one, it's the supply demand reduction, which is mainly for awareness and intervention in schools and communities and all that, awareness of drugs and supply, which is mainly law enforcement in terms of elevating with the hotspots and other traders around law enforcement on that. And the third pillar would be the harm reduction, which is mainly on rehabilitation and reunification with families, because mostly it leads to the issue of people being disorientated, ending up in streets, increasing another social ill, which is homelessness.
Okay. In your assessment, do you think the CDA performs its mandate efficiently? If so, how does it do that? And if not, what are the shortcomings? You can highlight both with regards to its mandate as well as in ensuring compliance, accountability, and monitoring development and implementation of the departmental drug master plan by national departments and provincial drug master plans. How are you proposing to address these shortcomings? Thank you.
Okay. Regarding its effectiveness, I can say it is visible, it is known, but not to a point where it addresses or being respected by expected jurisdictions. For instance, there is a need for municipalities to be running their own drugs programs, but I don't know, I think there's only two or three of the municipalities that are excelling in that, and the rest, I haven't seen anything. I know City of Tshwane has the Department on Drug and Substance Abuse. I know City of Johannesburg also, but it's not that visible, and then the Cape Metro as well. Ekuruleni, I've heard of that, but I have never seen any action on that, but I may be wrong. So in terms of like what could be done better, it's for the CDA to sort of be more visible in communities, in municipalities, and also because we know this industry is somehow dangerous because there are traders who are aggressive in dealing with whatever that they are selling. And then you get community leaders who have passion to push this, or NPOs who are dealing with on the ground with service users. But then if they don't get the necessary support, then it somehow kills their morale. And the other problem identified is especially on supply demand, where we still have issues with Metropolis, with SAPS responding when hotspots are identified, when people want to hold on awareness programs, even some schools don't allow. So if it's mandated that all the departments through maybe the LDEC, which is a good one of the good initiatives that is being done, where you have local departmental representatives in that particular committee, and then they will be made aware, including education and all that, because we cannot deal with one problem in isolation of the other, or, for instance, address the service user, or normally what is called the drug addict, but to redignify, we say the service user. You cannot deal them in isolation from their families, because it's going to be another problem. Families are hurt, families are in a state where this child that they hoped and loved has turned into something or someone very useless or a burden or even a criminal in the house. So how do we deal with it? So CDA should be more, more visible and aggressive in approach, especially to municipalities and departments to participate. Because in some instances, you will find, like I indicated before, community structures who are ready but need the support and they are not able to get the necessary support, even from the law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ma'am. The National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 represent a multi-sectoral approach to create South Africa free from harms associated with drug use, misuse, and abuse. The plan observes national and international policies, plans, and conventions to ensure respect and dignity for all South Africans. So my question to you is, if you are appointed as a board member, you will be expected to implement the authority's mandate. Share with us your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you think the CDA should achieve them.
In terms of the objectives, my understanding is they're not that much different from the previous ones, and it's the establishment of LDECs, and also to ensure the issue that the three pillars that I indicated before, supply, demand, and supply, demand, and rehabilitation. So given the mandate, you indicated the issue of advocacy. It's one of the things that we need to push, because we need to look at the issue of addressing multisectoral, as indicated, issue of homelessness. If we address that, fortunately, but COVID pushed government to recognize and deal with the issue of homelessness by housing the homeless people. It took COVID for us to recognize that there is that need for shelters. And if we address such issues, like the shelters for homelessness, and then programs like where you have methadone administered to reduce the intakes of drugs and all that. So advocacy and planning in terms of like using of methadone, because rehabilitation of the structured rehabilitation program is very costly and people drop out and out of that. So the administration of methadone coupled with counseling and psychosocial well-being and family reunification would be the order that would, for me, assist in reducing the numbers. So CDA would be in a position, if I'm appointed, to establish relations. Stakeholder relations is very vital, where it will also assist in visibility in communities and in municipalities and in other government departments, and also to ensure that we pull, as a board member, you would be able to pull strings and your weight, your power, to make sure that people participate. Because we get people who are nominated to come and be part of committees, and sometimes, or along the way, they just don't show up, lose interest, or they are swamped in their own work that they are doing, and there's a secondary to them, so they will not give it much of their attention and time. So it will be a matter of issue of advocacy, stakeholder relations, and also ensuring that we come up with a program that could be centralized and be used. For instance, the issue of what's happening with centers that shelter people, where there's a methadone administration, where there's some form of rehabilitation that is cost-effective.
Honorable, no, before 3.2,
yeah.
Honorable, because I can see there's 1 or 2 minutes left, can I ask you, what did you say about supply and demand on the objectives? Because when the question was, what do you understand to be the objectives of the Act, you said something about supply, you said something about demand. Oh, thank you. All right. Next question.
Yeah, ma'am, prior to the review of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-27, a need to conduct an evaluation was prioritized to assess how it was implemented. Subsequently, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation commissioned the implementation evaluation of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017 as part of the National Evaluation System in partnership with the Department of Social Development. This evaluation took place between August 2015 and January 2016. What were the key findings and recommendations of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017 implementation evaluation?
I
said, what was the key findings of the and the recommendations of the National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017?
Okay, I think it was the issue of the re-establishment and election of the structures that will implement the previous mandate.
Okay, I think in simple terms is, what is it that the 2013 to 2017 National Drug Master Plan didn't, what do you call it? Which they didn't, you know, address. What is new in this one, if I can put it this simple?
Well, did you get the question?
Yes, did you get it?
No.
What were the key findings and recommendations? Because there was an old plan. Now there's a new plan. What is the new recommendations? What was not in that plan of 2013 that is now in this new plan. To give, you want to say? Yes?
The National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017 was evaluated. And we would like to know what were those recommendations that were in the evaluation of it. Because before the new one came in, the older one was evaluated. And if you could just give us highlights of the evaluation.
Dislodge me from my job. Proceed. Well done. I just forgive you because you did my job properly. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, now I understand. Thank you. I think what was added, I stand to be corrected, but I think what was added was the issue of it has been moving from department to department, from justice to development to DSD and then to municipalities. So I think it was the issue of localizing it into municipalities and ensuring that there are offices and programs run on the ground, and then municipalities to compile their own sort of consolidated or user-friendly drug master plan in conjunction or in line with the national drug master plan. Because yes, it may be blanketing everybody, but areas are not the same, and some programs will not be universal and be implemented in the same way. So I think it was the issue of localizing and ensuring that municipalities have their own drug master plans and strategies to deal with the program.
Thank you very much. Ms. Motsepe, what is your understanding about good governance? And then also in your response, I would like you to focus more on what is going to be your role if you are appointed to serve on the board. How are you going to ensure that these principles and key features of key governance, good governance, are being implemented in the board? Thanks.
Thank you. For me, good governance is issue of accountability. We need to be accountable, be it on program implementation financially, and also dedication in terms of what we are doing. Because sometimes people, we are appointed and then we are there for probably the position or the money and easily influenced by political loudness. So if I am appointed, I believe in being a civic person more than a I do not belong to any political party, for a simple reason that you are obliged to follow the mandate of that party once you are in a specific position. So coming as an individual citizen, it will assist me to look and represent the communities or the people on the ground who are in a position to say, we are not here to pull off your stance, because in some cases, no offense meant, but some political parties, it's like it's there to outlast the other. Irrespective, we've seen the coalition in Tswane, where I come from. Irrespective of how good the program is, but because it came with party A, it will never be allowed to shine. And people will be in a position where they would even go all out to jeopardize so that it be compromised. So I think for me, good governance is issue of accountability and also knowing that we are doing it for the people, not for individual gain. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My finger didn't want to turn the page. Ms. Motsepe, could you tell us what are the key issues affecting young people, their families and communities regarding drug and substance abuse, and how would you advise the government to deal with these issues?
The issues with young people, one is the issue of peer pressure, two is unreasonable societal norms and values, and cultural impact. Remember, culture is not static, it's changing. So we are experiencing a situation where young people are caught in between, where the older generations are expecting them to behave this way, but they behave the other way around. And social problems that are available, it's one, the issue of the drug use as a result, some as a result of family dynamics. I had the opportunity to work in a shelter for the homeless people now during COVID, and when you talk to most of them, some of them went to the strip because of stepmothers and stepfathers. So we do not look into such issues, and it's not mainly about government, but it's a family thing. It's an internal thing. And what worsens the situation is the underpayment of social workers. You get a social worker, postgraduate, being paid 8,000. And how do you expect them to be dedicated and to do their job properly? Because even if, when they do family reunification, you know, you'll just do it for the sake of doing it, and then you get the 8,000, you like it's for the 8,000. And then you get someone who doesn't have a degree, they are making it bigger than you. I know I indicated it's not about money, but what we're doing, we're underplaying education. Education is very much underplayed. It's a problem where professionals end up also doing it for who cares, because they don't care about me, why should I? A social worker has a postgraduate degree. A social scientist, someone with a BA social science degree, someone with an honors in psychology, sociology, whatever, they are sitting at home. We have in those shelters, we have people who are teachers, people who are university dropouts, others are university graduates. We have people who attempted suicide because they were not working. The family was expecting a lot from them, what we call black tax. And they were not afforded the opportunity. And remember the education system that we come from, where issue of entrepreneurship is something very new. So you go to school in order to be educated and to be employed by someone else. Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you. Mrs. Mtsipe, in your opinion, what is the state of public rehabilitation center in the country? Are there any challenge with regard to the access of public rehabilitation centers in South Africa? If yes, what are those challenges? And how would you advise the country to address those challenges?
Thank you, ma'am. Public rehabilitation, there's lots and lots of challenges, but the main one is the waiting list. Because if somebody decides today that it takes from within, even if we can get you to a private one, but if the person is not ready to go for rehabilitation, it will not work. So if someone decides and they feel, now I've had enough of the drug or whatever, and I want to go for rehabilitation, and you're being put on waiting list for 8 months to nine to a year, I mean, that will not solve. So they end up going back. They end up relapsing. There's a huge waiting list, and I think there's little number of public rehabilitation centers. And the available private ones are very much expensive. I know Sanka costs something like 34,000 for about 6 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. And how many families, even the middle income families, how many of us can afford that? And some medical aid would not even pay a portion of that. So the issue is the problem, is the issue of access to rehabilitation centers. Secondly, capacitation of staff and recognition of professionals, like I indicated, social workers, especially in rehabilitation centers. We do have one that I know of in Hammanskraal. A social worker is paid 4,000 rand, and she is there because there's nowhere else to go. But how dedicated can one be? A facilitator is paid 3,500. A counselor is paid 3,500. That's a domestic worker salary, and that person has a degree. And you find people in government, people in municipalities, and you ask yourself, who in their rightful mind would write an advert and say, requirement is a degree, but then the payment is a domestic worker salary. What is that? So the problem is that the few elite up there thinking and believing that problems on the ground will remain problems on the ground. And we're not putting any efforts into assisting that. So until we recognize issues of staff component and increase the number of public rehabilitation centers, then we'll be able to. The other option is like the homeless shelters. If we use the likes of substitute therapies like methadone, opioid That will also assist, that also help, coupled with psychosocial well-being. Families also, family reintegration through counseling sessions with families and all that, that will also assist in dealing with the issue of drug and substance abuse.
Thank you. I think one of the challenges facing the country is the lack of comprehensive national statistics on the prevalence of substance and drugs abuse. How can the CDA play a role in this regard?
The issue of statistics. There's a lot of research that's been done lately, but the problem is the research is done for like it's an academic thesis for shelving elsewhere. We, in most cases, research papers have recommendations. Those recommendations are never implemented yet. In most cases. What should or what could happen if I'm in that position? Partnering with the local universities, because they also have a community engagement. Each university is expected to have a community engagement element. So if we partner with universities to say, through your community engagement department, we can do the same way as it was done with HIV/AIDS. Remember, that's MRI as well. It's like now populated all over. And they provide stats more and in comparison or in conjunction with Stats SA on some of the issues. So we can partner with universities and say, we need you to partner with us. We need to get statistics on this and that and that. So stakeholder engagement is very crucial. So if we partner with universities, for instance, I know Tekkies University of Pretoria is dealing with a matter of drug and substance abuse. They have COSAP sites where they administer methadone. They have daily intakes of people who come and they may provide. So if funds are available, you can partner with them and other research institutions to say, let us see how we're working year to year or on a three-year basis, and then we work on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Motsepe, recently there has been much debate around the decriminalization of the use of cannabis or marijuana in South Africa by the courts. What is your opinion of this court judgment regarding the decriminalization of marijuana for personal use?
Thank you. I'm not against the decriminalization because we will not shy away from our history as a country and as a continent. Tobacco is as dangerous as marijuana, but because the Europeans came and made it a point that they make sales and whatever out of it, then it was legal. Cannabis has been used by great-grandmothers and everybody, not only in terms of smoking, but in terms of healing, cooking it, or putting ginger and whatever the concoction that they even recommend for COVID now. Some of it were used before by our great-grandmothers, and they went. So it's just that it was criminalized by colonization and those who were pushing for their economic emancipation. And I'm saying we cannot overlook or ignore our history. So for me, it was a good move.
Thanks a lot. During the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdown regulations were introduced, which led to the ban of alcohol and tobacco sales in the country. Now, how would you advise a country to deal with the sale of alcohol in particular during an epidemic in the future?
Sale of alcohol. I think this issue of, because it was never that much of a problem until COVID came in. So we are a very must I say, rebellious nation. The more you say don't do that, the more we're going to do. So if you let it open, but they comply to their licenses and all that, I think all that will work. The problem was the issue of being some accident or a hospital being shunned because of accidents and everything that's been happening based on alcohol related. But there's no scientific proof or research that showed that alcohol contributed to a high number of that. It's just, for me, I believe it was just somebody's opinion and discussion from Eiffel Towers and not on the ground. Because decisions are made up there and they don't even know how the ground feels like. So for me, that would never make any difference as long as people know that drink and driving is against the rule. The license holders know that they are sailing from this point to that point and they've been working. And again, we should not shy away from our history. We have people who are educated because of alcohol or mkomboti sales. So once you close that, you are closing down a family's income. So for me, I'm saying we keep to the legislation, to the license requirements, and people will be held accountable for drink and driving, for being under consumption when you are not supposed to be. And that brings something up again from my side where I'm saying I have seen people being hunted for drinking alcohol during COVID. But then people who are trafficking, there's no efforts that are pushed that much. If I'm being seen with a beer somewhere in the rural areas of Hammanskraal, I will be hunted and found. But someone who trades with children or women or stuff like that, it takes years to find that. So I think our priorities are not right. Thank you. How soon would you want, if I become the successful incumbent, how soon would you want the person to start and what would be your conditions?
I guess the details of how soon will be more in the hands of the minister, because the committee is actually selecting to submit for minister's final appointment. And the HR issues and a number of other details get dealt with in there. And I cannot tell you exactly now how soon it will be. But from the committee point of view, the sooner the better. Because this committee that is there has been there for a long time now. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
We are involved in the